Things are hotting up in the United States of America. It's always been very interesting to me that they refer to the United States as the Golden Medina. We always felt a bit second rate here in South Africa because America was the absolute apex of what a Jewish community could be. And I think in some sort of a way, American Jews sort of saw themselves as Mayflower children, that they were so a part of the American society that I don't think Americans saw an anti-Semitic response to the 7th of October coming in the way that it came. I happen to know this personally because I was there in April last year for Pesach, and the discussions around the tables were one of people being shaken to the core of their very foundations being shaken. It was a fascinating thing for me. I think as South Africans, we always knew our place. We always knew that we were irrelevant and unimportant. But I think for American Jews, the entire dynamic has shifted. And it's for that reason today that I wanted to speak to Ilan Berman, the Vice President of the American Foreign Policy Council, who is involved with something that I'd never thought we'd be talking to an American Jew about, the cost of protection of the American Jewish community. Ilan Berman, thank you for being with us on Chai FM in South Africa this afternoon. Did you ever foresee that you'd be living in times like these?
Oh, thanks for having me. So the short answer is no, and I think your read on it is exactly right. I'd make one qualification. I don't think American Jews, and you know, I'm an American Jew, and I was born in Israel, but I've lived here for almost half a century. So I'm very much an American Jew, and I don't think we thought of ourselves as too important. But I think we very clearly pre-October 7th thought of ourselves as properly integrated into American society. And yes. Growing up very clearly hearing and dismissing sentiments that say that, you know, a strong Israel is necessary for the safety of Jews everywhere. And the that didn't ring true to me in the context of the United States, because we're here and we're established and we're integrated. And October 7th was very much a wake up call in that regard. And I think that there is a quite a lot of soul searching, but also quite a lot of activity and energy that's being devoted to a more proactive stance post October 7th.
I hear you, Ilan. I'm just thinking back to, you know, the time before October the 7th. And even then, it was Charlottesville. The Jews won't replace us. There was the killings in Jersey City or Pittsburgh Shul. I mean, there had been a whole bunch of really ugly anti-Semitic attacks that one never thought would have happened in America. And that was before, prior to October the 7th.
No, that's true. And frankly, the problem with sort of the inherent problem with anti-Semitism in the United States is that it has always mapped poorly onto American politics. So if you are of the political left, you believe that it originates only on the American right, yep. American political right. And if you're on the right, you believe it's only left-wing anti-Semitism. But what we've discovered is, and Barry Weiss, I think, formerly of the New York Times, now the Free Press, wrote about this in her book, How to Combat Anti-Semitism, a couple of years ago. You know, the real problem is that it's actually a tripartite problem. It's of the left, it's of the right, and there's also Islamism that drives anti-Semitic sentiment. And they're all combining, both domestically here in the United States, and also internationally in a really toxic group.
The perfect storm, absolute perfect storm. I suppose that brings us on as a nice segue to this issue of the Department of Homeland Security allocating $110 million. I must say that sounds like a lot of money. I'm not so sure that it is. Talk to that if you would.
Sure. Well, so I think it's correct. It's significant, but it's, I think, a drop in the bucket in terms of what's needed. And again, I'm not directly involved in this. I'm certainly an interested observer. Mm-hmm. But the one thing in my portfolio, and I'm at a think tank that works on a whole range of issues, including Middle East policy, including information warfare, is that connectivity, the connectivity between online radicalization and real world harm. And so these organizations, the ones that are getting infusions of cash from the Department of Homeland Security, are at the moment busy raising the alarm about precisely this, about the fact that whether it's radical activists or it's non-state actors, and frankly, non-state actors, including countries that you wouldn't expect. For example, the People's Republic of China, that are involved in stoking this kind of intolerant sentiment. And it ends up having real world effects because the internet provides and social media provide mediums for individual radicalization. And, you know, people take up arms. It's no longer sort of the old days of how people get radicalized.
So what's the American Jewish community going to look like? Am I going to visit New York? Am I going to visit Manhattan, go to B'nai Yeshurun and have to go through security and armed guards in order to get into a shul? Is that where we're heading?
Well, I think you're already beginning to see this. And I can sort of only speak to sort of my local community here in the Washington, D.C. suburbs. But, you know, at my shul, we have for years had a police officer on Shabbat services, on Friday nights, on Saturday mornings, a police officer in a patrol car sitting outside as sort of a preventative measure. But I think there's a qualitative difference here. Mm-hmm. And it's not a permanent condition, but it does distinguish the United States from places like the UK, for example. In the UK, the Community Protection Trust and organizations like this are precisely so needed because the government has a really hands-off laissez-faire attitude. The government cannot be counted on to combat anti-Semitism. And here in the United States, I think in the initial post-October 7th period, you saw, I think, less activity than I would have liked in terms of a robust federal response to anti-Semitism. I think that's changing now, and we can talk about why it's changing, and right politics obviously plays a role. But what you have, at least for the moment, is, I think, a really serious understanding in the federal government that this is something that the government can't leave to fester, that it needs to be active.
I hear you, and yet I think sometimes we are our own worst enemies. I look at the Jewish population of Manhattan. I note that 10% went out to vote for the mayor, and Zoran Mamdani is going to walk it in a city which has got the largest Jewish population outside of Israel in the world.
Well, no, it certainly looks that way. And you know, much to my dismay and much to the dismay of my friends and family that live in New York. But sadly, this is not a sort of a unique situation. As a community, those competing impulses, the impulses of community and the impulses of integration, are often at odds with one another. And in many cases, and I would argue that, you know, in the New York political scene, which tends to trend very liberal, yeah, there, you know, the emphasis on integration tends to crowd out the more pragmatic discussions about communal safety and things like that.
Last question, crazy question. I never ever thought I'd be asking this. Are you optimistic, the outlook for the American Jewish community?
I think I would answer this a little bit subtly with a little bit of nuance. I think the answer depends. Generally, I'm optimistic. Generally, I'm optimistic because the community is strong and the community is awake in a way that it hasn't been in quite a long time, frankly, ever. But a lot of it depends on the political currents. And so the problem that we started with, this sort of this tripartite problem of anti-Semitism coming from the left, from the right, and from radical Islam, is a vexing one. And the demographics of American politics and are dramatically changing. The political affinity for Israel and for the Jews in the Democratic Party, for example, it has changed materially, and we can argue about how much, but it's clear that there's a change that's happening. And so I think it depends. I think the outlook is rosy, except that it may change dramatically over the next few years as a result of generational change in American politics.
Ilan Berman, the Vice President of the American Foreign Policy Council, thank you for talking to us on Chai FM. I find that incredibly interesting. And if you don't mind, I think we're going to put you on speed dial and talk to you now and again.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to do it.
There you go. I really did enjoy that. Time check for you. It is coming up for 5:02. Very quickly to the SMS line. Jeff says to me, Simon, the Netflix show with Leo Ruz is called Off-Road. Yeah, for some reason I've been calling it Journey, but then again, I'm not very surprised by that. Ronnie said to me, boy, it's good to have you back. Thanks for that. You made my afternoon. And you say, how do you change people's ideologies? We've been trying to implement solutions based on Judeo-Christian, aka convey Western values in a very different environment where they simply don't apply or work. Interesting comment, and I think we might pick that one up and run with it tomorrow.